All right. Good morning. It's July 24th, 2025 at 8:30 a.m. This is a time and date scheduled for a hearing set by the notice of hearing issued by the North Dakota Public Service Commission on July 2nd, 2025 for case number PU-24-87. My name is Hope Hogan, and I'm the hearing officer that's been designated for today's hearing. This hearing is being held at the Commission Hearing Room in the State Capitol in Bismarck, North Dakota. As we begin today, I just ask everybody to check your phones to make sure they're either silenced or turned off so we don't have cell phone interruptions. Also, I think there's an attendance sheet. The Commission would ask everybody that's in attendance today to sign in so that there's a record of all who attended our hearing today. This is a hearing on Badger Wind LLC's request for a waiver of a requirement to install a light mitigating technology system for 9 of the 92 turbines anticipated to be constructed on the Badger Wind project in Logan and McIntosh counties, North Dakota. The Federal Aviation Administration did not approve the use of an aircraft detection lighting system on those 9 turbines and is requiring standardized, synchronized red lights to be utilized. The notice of hearing specifies the following issue to be considered, that being whether a waiver of requirement should be granted on technical or economic feasibility. I'm now going to ask the parties to make their appearance for the record. Ms. Smith, do you want to state your appearance for the record and introduce the witnesses you intend to call today?
Good morning. Molly Smith with Frederickson and Byron here on behalf of Badger Wind LLC. Also online is Bridget Duffus, also with Frederickson and Byron. I have Nick Gebauer with me from Orsted, who's going to testify on behalf of Badger Wind LLC.
All right, thank you. Mr. Johnson, do you want to state your appearance for the record and introduce Commission staff that will be participating in today's hearing?
Sure. Brian Johnson from the Public Service Commission. With me is Robert Frank, and behind me is Victor Shook. I don't believe Victor Shook's going to ask any questions, but I guess I would ask that both be allowed to ask questions if required.
All right, thank you. Testimony for the public will be taken after the completion of Badger's witness testimony. I encourage the public to take the opportunity to tell commissioners anything they think they should know about this matter. I assure you that what you have to say is important to the commission and will be considered by the commission. I'll now ask if there's any opening comments from the commissioners, and we'll start with Commissioner Kringstad.
Thank you. Good morning. I do not have any opening comments.
Commissioner Crispin?
Just wanted to reiterate what you said, that we do value that testimony if someone does choose to provide some from the public. But also, everyone's maybe patience a little bit. After many, many years, we have different microphones. And so if all of a sudden we're blasting because we're too close or we're too far away or something, we're getting used to these. And so understand if that happens.
Commissioner Haugenhofer.
Good morning. No opening comments.
All right. Thank you. Prior to the start of our hearing, Ms. Smith, you passed out, I think it's slides from a presentation. Can we mark that as Exhibit 1?
Yes, that would be great. Exhibit 1. We also did file some additional information, which is discussed in the presentation. That was filed on July 15th, and so that is in the docket. I would just ask if we could make the filings in the docket part of the record in this matter.
Any objection, Mr. Johnson?
No objection, Your Honor.
Okay. Though that will be accepted into the record as indicated. Any other preliminary matters we need to address before we move to testimony? Ms. Smith, did you have anything?
I will just say that we are approaching this the same way as last time. So rather than a formal Q&A, we're going to Nick is going to do a presentation. It's updated from last time, but just wanted to say that up front. We're going to handle it that way. Otherwise, no, nothing further.
All right, great. Mr. Johnson, any preliminary matters?
No, Your Honor.
All right, then, Ms. Smith, you can call your witness.
And Nick Gebauer? And I'll hand this to you. So this is...
Good morning. I'll have you start by stating your full name for the record and spelling your last name.
Nick Gebauer, and last name is G-E-B-A-U-E-R.
And before you testify this morning, Mr. Gebauer, I'm required by law to advise you on the penalties for perjury in the state of North Dakota. Perjury is a Class C felony punishable by a maximum fine of $10,000, a maximum 5 years imprisonment, or both. Do you understand what perjury is?
Yes.
And being advised of the potential penalties for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this case today?
Yes.
All right, thank you. Go ahead, Ms. Smith.
Nick, I'll let you go ahead and start the presentation.
Okay, thank you. Yes, and Molly did say this is updated. I will caveat there's a lot of the same information that you already heard. Just wanted to make sure to cover everything in case we have anyone new listening. But there are some new slides at the end, too. But again, my name is Nick Gebauer. I represent Badger Wind LLC and this request for partial waiver of light mitigation technology requirement for the Badger Wind Farm in Logan and McIntosh counties. So Badger Wind submitted a request for partial waiver of requirement to install light mitigation technology for 9 of the 92 turbines to be constructed as part of the project. We received a lighting and marking plan from the FAA in which 83 turbines are allowed to use ADLS as expected. However, 9 turbines were denied ADLS by the FAA and are required to use standard lighting. Since ADLS is the only light mitigation technology approved by the FAA, a waiver is warranted based on technical infeasibility. So again, wanted to take a couple minutes to step through when we received our CSC amendment and today. So we received the amended Certificate of Site Compatibility on September 11th, 2024, and shortly afterwards filed our engineering design drawings, which depicted the final layout. And with the layout finalized, fully approved, we were then able to complete the final steps of the lighting and marking process with the FAA, which typically takes about 4 to 6 months. We worked with DTECT, the ADLS provider for the project, to finalize the ADLS radar location and also the height, and to put together an FAA submittal package, which we submitted to the FAA along with the DNH request and the lighting and marking plan request on January 14th. On February 6th, the FAA issued the determination of no hazard for the ADLS tower. And then shortly afterwards, on February 12th, the FAA issued their initial lighting and marking plan, which denied ADLS use on 19 turbines. In response to that, we engaged with Capital Airspace Group, a top-tier airspace consultant, to build a case for why additional turbines should be allowed to use ADLS. And we were able to schedule a meeting with the FAA on March 19th. And after successful discussions with them, we were able to come up with a plan that reduced the number of turbines required to use standard lighting down to 9. And the FAA released that updated marketing lighting plan on March 31st. And per the FAA, that did maximize the use of ADLS at that project site. With that, we filed our request for partial waiver with the PSC on April 16th. We had a hearing a few weeks ago on July 1st. And then I'll also point out that the project is still well on track for coming online this year, along with the ADLS system generally. In fact, we actually have turbines getting delivered today, and we have blades coming from the Grand Forks facility as well as part of the wind farm. So it's a very active construction site. So this first map shows the location of the 19 turbines that were originally denied ADLS use by the FAA. The 9 blue dots are the turbines that the FAA is still requiring standard use or standard lights to be used. The 10 purple dots are turbines that the FAA originally denied, but have since allowed ADLS to be used at those as long as we use ADLS or use standard lights on the blue turbines in front of it. Primarily, this is due to the concept of shielding that's better described in the next slide. So this is a zoomed in. Yes, sir.
Do you mind questions as you go? Or can you go back to that other one? And do you have?
Yeah.
Does that point to? Or
yes, it does.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you like point where Wishik is exactly on the map?
Yeah. So it's down, kind of in this gap down here. And so the town, like outskirts, you know, are kind of around in that area.
I mean, I see it written on here, but you know. I was trying to see whether it's closer to the W, whether it's off one side or the other from the printer.
Yeah.
Or what.
But, like in that gap that you see, it's more towards the west side of the gap in the turbines.
Do you have the distance of, say, of these 9? Like, what's the distance of the farthest one from the airport and then the distance of the closest of the 10 that they ultimately said, well, okay?
Yes, we do. So that was filed as a separate exhibit. I'm going to actually skip ahead. No, that's okay. So generally speaking, all 19 turbines were between 1.94 and 3.15. nautical miles from the airport runway. And then the breakdown, the 9 turbines that are still required to use standard lighting, that's 1.94 to 2.87 nautical miles. The 10 that we're now allowed to use ADLS for, those range from 2.19 to 3.15 nautical miles.
2.19 to what?
3.15.
Right. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. All right, I'm going to jump back into the shielding concept. And so, yeah, this map is a zoomed in portion of the project map showing the airport, down in the south. And so you can imagine if you're a pilot taking off from the airport, you're going to first see the turbines that are the blue dots. And that will alert you that there is a wind farm there. And we were able to discuss with the FAA that requiring lighting at the purple dots would be redundant because they're essentially shielded from the view of the pilot. So, for example, turbine like T71 up in the northeast, the FAA said that we are allowed to use ADLS at that turbine after their reevaluation as long as turbine T70A uses standard lighting. If T70A were not there, then T71 would need to use standard lighting. And I bring this up just to show that it's not as simple as removing the 9 turbines. Because of that shielding concept, additional turbines would need to be removed.
But on that point, though...
Yes.
So the 19 ranged up to 3.15. I don't recall exactly how a nautical mile corresponds to a regular mile, but I know it's just a little
more. Close, yeah.
So that's pretty close to 3 nautical miles. So I guess my question that was I thought of after our previous round, if the 19 were removed, then is everything okay?
That is our expectation based on discussions with the FAA, yes. So this last map just shows the 9 turbines that are still required by the FAA to have standard lighting, and it's only for these 9 that we're requesting the waiver. This map was also provided as an attachment to the initial filing back in April. Okay, so these next 2 slides are new based on feedback and some questions from the previous hearing. So one of the questions was about specifying the impact of a denial on the project and on the turbines. Generally, the project design was optimized to ensure maximum efficiency and output, create as many electrons as we can from that wind farm, which also maximizes the economic benefits to the landowners and to the community. But if the waiver request is denied, we expect 19 turbines, turbine locations to be lost due to this shielding concept. And even if we were able to utilize 9 less optimal alternate locations, it would still only be 82 turbines that could be built, reducing the total capacity of the project by 28 megawatts. 12 landowners would lose their turbines. 9 families would actually lose all of their turbines and the revenue that they were expecting from this. And in turn, too, the project value overall would decrease approximately $60 million. And $12 million less would be paid to local landowners directly, and over $4 million less would be paid in property tax revenue for state and local taxing authorities. Generally the per megawatt hour cost of the electricity being produced by the wind farm would be higher.
So one of the things, Nick, that I've wondered in this, but it didn't really seem so important. I think the original site certificate approval was for up to 93 turbines. And now we're always talking 92. So I don't really know what happened to that other one. But wasn't the 93, weren't there 102 sites kind of approved, but you could only build up to 93 of them? Yeah. And so, yeah, just regarding the 9, if they were eliminated, that would reduce the output and reduce some payments to some landowners. But could you not then use your alternate locations, and that would bring your output back up and other landowners would benefit?
Yeah, so we wouldn't be able to replace all 19 turbines.
But you could the 9.
We could the 9, but then more turbines would need to be lit per the FAA using the standard lighting. So even if we remove the 9, the next closest turbines, closest to the airport, would then need to be lit.
And so there's that one little discrepancy between 92 and 93. But
yeah.
So if you removed all 19 and replaced 9 of them with your alternates, and I don't know if going from 93 to 92 created a 10th alternate or not, so maybe 10 of them, you would only essentially be down 9 or 10 turbines.
Correct. Yeah, and I can get into more details if desired, but we went from the 93 to the 92 because in the permit request, we were requesting that we could build up to 93 because, build a little bit more than the maximum amount that you can inject onto the grid due to electrical losses. You'll still stay below that cap most of the time. So it's an optimization if you build 91, 92, 93 based on utilizing the injection capacity at the grid location. So 92 was where we ended up there. So that's that one difference.
So if this were denied,
yeah,
then presumably the next 10, one might assume would be 2. And so, but then you have the alternate location. So what you would ultimately end up with is around a little over 80 turbines instead of a little over 90.
Correct. Yeah. And so we did have 102 turbine locations permitted. One of them is not a viable alternate due to the turbines that are built. So we have 9 alternates that are left. So if we lose 19 turbine locations, then 9 of them we could try to move to these less optimal locations. But 10 of them, we couldn't. So that's how we'd go from 92 turbines to 82.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah. All right. And then also in the hearing a few weeks ago, there was a request of looking into this distance concept, which we discussed a little bit earlier as well. We knew throughout this 8-year development process that we're close to the airport. And so we were coordinating very closely with the FAA, with Wishik Airport, and with North Dakota Aeronautics Commission in siting this project. That process actually resulted in 5 turbine locations being removed and shifting 2 turbine locations before submitting the CSC even. ADLS was never raised as an issue by any of these agencies. And then furthermore, the FAA regulations don't specify a distance that we have to be from the airport in order to utilize ADLS, and rather it's a case-by-case evaluation. So our expectation, based on discussions that we had and the fact that we received the determinations of no hazards for all of those turbine locations, was that ADLS was also going to be approved. So it was a surprise for us that they denied it at these locations. But based on what we've learned here, wanting to make sure that we don't repeat these things again and don't run into this issue, we do commit to not site any future turbines within the 3.15 nautical miles of a public use airport in North Dakota. And that's a process that, you know, will be enforced through our CSC processes going forward. So, you know, it's a good learning opportunity for us.
When you say that ADLS was an issue that was not raised, do you mean that it was at that point determined to not be an issue, or it was just something that hadn't been brought up?
It was something that wasn't brought up. Yeah.
Should it have been at that point?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, we again can learn from this and, mm-hmm. you know, specifically ask these questions. But based on all the discussions we had too about maintaining a safe airspace, we talked about their current use. We talked about future use of the airport and their plans. You know, I think we also expected that if there were issues that were foreseen, it could have been brought up there. But yeah, it wasn't explicitly brought up.
I'll let you finish your presentation.
All right,
and I'll can I just add a point to that?
Yes.
I think we all learned a lesson, because at the hearing, I remember specifically talking about the impact on communication with the airport mm-hmm. and the hospital if they had to come in and all that. So it was discussed at the hearing, some of the concerns. So I think we all have a takeaway from this application, the siting of it, and close to airports and impacts on communication. So
thank you
for recognizing that.
And actually, the last slide I have is just the conclusion slide. But based on technical infeasibility, Badger Wind requests that the commission grant this waiver from light mitigation technology requirement for just the 9 turbines identified in blue nearest the Wishick Municipal Airport. Similar to Basin Electric's Prairie Winds project in 2021, Badger Wind also commits to reviewing FAA-approved light mitigation technology systems, and will report these results to the commission at least every 3 years to determine if the waiver should continue based on continued technical infeasibility, or if there is an acceptable light mitigation technology system that would be approved by the FAA and can be implemented on these 9 turbines. And then the thing added as well is that, you know, we commit to not site any future turbines within 3.15 nautical miles of a public use airport in North Dakota. And that is actually our last slide. So any other questions, happy to step through.
Mr. Johnson, any questions?
So if those 19 were removed and everything was outside of the 3.15, what's the percentage of certainty that those would be allowed to operate with ADLS? I mean, you say it's a case-by-case basis and there's no hard and fast distance. Mm-hmm. If you resubmitted with those 19 gone, what are the odds you think that ADLS would be at 100%?
Yeah, so it's certainly not certain. And so there is risk there that the impact is even more than the 19 turbines. That's our understanding based on discussions with the FAA. But again, it is a case-by-case basis. And even one particular nuance here is that the specialist that's been working primarily on this project has since retired. So there would be a new specialist as well pulled into this project.
Okay. I guess the only other question I have is, has the company looked at... So I know LIDS is about the only other technology that's even close to being approved. I don't know why that's stalled out or not being pushed further anymore. Do you know at this point, if, say, LIDS was approved, would you be able to operate this with two different ADLS systems at the same time? Like, those nine would then go to the light intensity dimming solution model, and the rest would be on the other one. Have you looked into whether or not they're compatible, or that's even a feasible option?
Yeah, so we did talk to Capital Aerospace Group, the consultant, about LIDS. Their feedback was that about 5 years ago, you know, up until that point, they were trying to get some approval from the FAA. They were not having any success, and then they went away. And so there hasn't been any discussion about it in those last 5 years. But generally, yeah, we will review new technology options as if the FAA does approve them. And then if we are able to implement it, if it's compatible, then we'll certainly implement it.
Okay. That's all the questions I have.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Frank, any questions?
Yeah. Just wanted to flesh out a little bit more the 19 being removed. And I know we're trying to anticipate what the FAA is going to do. But when they initially did the analysis, they weren't thinking about ADLS at all. There wasn't even the concept of shielding at all in their minds. They did everything was just standard lighting, is the assumption.
So when you first get the determinations of no hazard, correct, they don't look at lighting at all. They just issue them by default with standard lighting.
Okay.
The primary reason actually for that is because you usually submit more D&H requests than the turbines that you're about to build, because you need those locations locked in for permitting processes. Okay. Once you lock in on the final layout, including identifying what's alternates and what's not, then you submit the final layout you plan to build to the FAA, and they look at the lighting study there.
But so it does seem like they didn't even have, you had another meeting or coordination where you discussed it, or maybe multiple meetings, but the idea of shielding wasn't initially there as well when they determined the 19 ADLS. Is that a newer concept, or is that something that, I'm just trying to figure out why that wasn't initially in the, when they denied the 19 as well. Is it just something that they didn't think of, or you know, can you fill that in?
Yeah, I can't really speak to what they were considering, but based on like the 19 that were originally denied, I think that's a safe expectation, but yeah, I can't confirm.
So that you have more of a certainty because the shielding effect wasn't thought of, and so if you remove the 19, there wasn't any other shielding effects going on, basically, that would then, you know, because we have this, you know, you remove one, so then it's a compounding effect there, essentially.
Yeah, their regulations, you know, do talk specifically about this, and it says it might be appropriate to keep certain obstructions closest to known activity areas, so in this case, airports, illuminated during the nighttime hours. So our expectation is they would stop that once they got to the 3.15 nautical miles, but they certainly have it within their capability to go beyond that if they chose to. Like if they determined that out of an abundance of caution, that was the best way to maintain a safe airspace.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Mr. Kringsted?
Thank you. On slide 3, I should say, you kind of walked through like the timeline overview of everything that's happened since the site certificate was issued in September of 2024. Can you just give all of us a recap on what coordination was done with FAA and what work was done in order to meet the light mitigating technology requirement prior to the permit being issued?
Sure. So we originally reached out to ADLS providers. The earliest record I could find was from 2021.
Mm-hmm.
Just to understand, you know, if that's an option suitable for this project location. There's generally two main providers that provide these services, but we worked with them to get like general suitability, to understand like general locations, but we can't finalize like the exact location and the height until the layout is like fully permitted and confirmed. But yeah, there was a number of discussions both between us and the ADLS provider, and then also our primary contractor, mm-hmm. on the site, and the ADLS providers as well.
So, I like some of what I'm just trying to work through in my mind is some of the timing of that feels sort of like what comes first, like the chicken or the egg, right? Type of thing. So, like from your perspective, is it fair to say that you can you not get approval from the FAA on like a light mitigation plan until the permit is issued?
So that's generally standard practice because, again, you're like showing them the final layout that you're building. Mm-hmm. There's no alternates. It's the one that you're fully confident is going to happen. And there's work that the ADLS provider has to put into that as well to create a package that shows the view shed, what the radar can see, and in relation to like specific turbine locations. So standard practice is certainly that you do a lot of the pre-work, generally understand who your ADLS provider is going to be, but then you don't submit the lighting and marking plan to the FAA until you have final engineering drawings and the layout is fully locked in.
So is there anything besides like the final engineering drawings or the final layout that's needed for that are requirements of submitting that lighting plan to FAA?
No. I mean, the package itself like includes a bunch of GIS analysis mm-hmm. done. So I think, yeah, it falls under the engineering piece mm-hmm. that you had said. But otherwise, no, it's the turbine locations and then all of the required studies and documents from the FAA or for the FAA.
I saw in the supplemental filings that you'd listed like the FAA circular, I think it was, that had some, or advisory circular. So that would be the official FAA regulation. But is it correct that still does not say that 3.15 nautical miles in there?
That's correct. Yeah.
So like, when did this 3.15 nautical miles come up? Like, because it seems like that's the first, I guess, maybe benchmark that we've heard of. So tell me more about that and when that came up.
Sure. So that number came directly from looking at the distances from any point of the runway to the nearest turbine of the 19 that were denied. So that was our expectation of, you know, if we're beyond this, we are most likely not going to run into ADLS issues. But again, it is a case-by-case basis from the FAA.
So it is project-specific.
It is a number that came from this project.
From this particular project. So is there any assurance then that going forward, like on another project, that 3.15 would be enough?
I definitely can't guarantee it. Mm-hmm. But our expectation is it certainly makes it a lot less likely to become an issue. Yes. But yeah, since it is a case-by-case evaluation, and the FAA has, you know, the primary mission is to ensure a safe airspace, and it's completely at their jurisdiction how best to do that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I certainly can't guarantee that won't become a problem at that distance.
One of the things I appreciated in your supplemental filing was, you know, you kind of talked about like some things that you guys have just learned like in hindsight. So I'm just going to add, like, in hindsight, was this something that could have been done earlier in the process?
Well, so definitely in hindsight, like asking explicitly about ADLS mm-hmm. would definitely have been a good step. You know, we were certainly aware that was, you know, an expectation, and we've been talking about ADLS and planning for it, you know, since this project has been in development. Submitting a layout to the FAA and having them do a lighting and marking study earlier is definitely, you know, diverges from their preferred method. Like, they want to just look at a layout once it's finalized. Because even if you're like moving one turbine a little bit, or you move from a primary location to an alternate location, mm-hmm. then they have to reevaluate that whole study again. So that's certainly their preference. I think it is something that, yeah, we can talk to the FAA more about.
Okay. I think that's all I had. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Commissioner Chrisman?
Well, first of all, thank you, Nick, for the second time around. I like the way you present things as a witness and answer questions, and in this case, let us interrupt your presentation with our questions as you went. I think you've kind of clarified my questions on the impactful part of it as it goes to this, but now I have some questions on just our process and what we can really do. So in your presentation this morning, as well as in the April, the original request for waiver, you mentioned the Prairie Winds case as a comparison.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with the big distinction between these two, though, in the law and in the administrative rules?
In some respects, yes. There is definitely some similarities as well, just based on, you know, FAA not approving ADLS and that being the only option available. And then in terms of like timing, you know, they were a constructed project looking to retrofit based on the law. We are a project that's under construction, but we're like well under construction. We have a little over 200 people on site today. Turbines are getting delivered. You know, it would also be very difficult to make any changes at this point too.
But as I'm going to get into here, our laws and rules make clear distinctions between projects that were cited before June of 2016 and after June of 2016. And that was way back in 2009 or something. So there is that. But then...
Commissioner, if I may, since it's a legal question, could you elaborate on the legal distinction, because I'm not seeing a legal distinction and how they would be treated between the two.
I will in just a moment. Okay. Let me just make clear one other thing, because
sure,
then it'll help to clarify that or to correct me, one or the other. When you talked about reviewing this every 3 years, that sounds to me like a comment that would be made if you were seeking an extension. And then that's why I'll do these two things. Yeah, there's also a difference between extensions and waivers. And so it sounds like you're seeking an extension, but I think it's pretty clear from it's a request for waiver, and you've talked about a waiver. So I'm trying to clarify in my mind for sure that it's a waiver that you're seeking, not an extension. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah, I can take that part since it's legal. It is a partial waiver request. That commitment was made because that was a commitment also made by Basin when they obtained their waiver. So that was something the commission had asked be incorporated so that there was not an expectation that it's granted and additional, you know, options become available but are not then looked at to be implemented. So the idea was, okay, we're granting your waiver, but we would like you each of the 3 years to report to us if there's anything that could be utilized on the project. So that's why that is included. It is a waiver request, and it is a commitment just so that it is an open-ended, basically, if something new comes on that could be used, there's an expectation that it would be looked at to see if it could be implemented.
Okay. So then, I don't know how to say this in the form of a question, so it'll be kind of a statement, and I want to get your feedback on it.
Yeah.
So the law seems to allow pretty clearly that the commission may grant, not that we have to, but that we may grant a waiver or an extension of time. Before this agency put the bill in, it just said that we may grant an extension of time. added the part about the waiver. And then the rules that guide us in doing that, that you brought up, I guess, a couple of things. One is you had mentioned that the requirements for the request are in 6906.11.02 subsection 7. And that is, again, that's an extension request, not a waiver request, is what 7 is talking about. I'll let you deal with that one first.
Sure. So I think I can probably deal with both. So at the time these rules were implemented, there was only the extension option. However, the statute was amended to allow for the waiver. Statutes trump rules. Rules are enacted at the direction of the statute. So just because the rules haven't been updated to include the waiver doesn't mean that the waiver doesn't exist. Even if we ignore the rules, let's just say the rules don't exist at all, the statute still authorizes the waiver. I view it as another chicken and the egg concept. The rules, the statute was enacted. The rules were then enacted in direction to the statute. The statute was then amended. The rules have not since been updated to align with the amendment. We simply cited to that rule because it's the lays out the process. So by default, we were applying the same process that would be applied in your rules. If it's easier to not reference the rules, we can simply rely on the statute because the statute does grant the authority to issue a waiver.
So if I'm right that it was our bill that changed the statute, mm-hmm. when you say that the rules weren't amended to, you didn't say catch up, or however you said that,
right.
with the statute. But if the agency gets rules put in place and then puts in the bill to codify them, granting us the option to do that, the option to follow our rules, at which the rules allow for, now besides that whole thing with number 7, it really kind of boils down to that there are waivers available for projects less than 5 megawatts. There are extensions available for projects cited before June of 2016. But when I read number 1 in the rule, it just says that a functioning light mitigation system is required for those cited after June of 2016. And so, I mean, it's a legal conundrum in my mind. I don't know that the rules need to be changed after the agency gets the law changed to codify the rules that we already have.
So the law did not codify the rules that you have. The law actually amended the statute to add a provision that was not provided for initially. An agency only has the authority that is granted to it by the legislature. The legislature enacts statutes. Statutes direct you. It says you shall adopt rules in 1, but in 2 it says in the third line, after public hearing, the commission may grant a waiver or extension of time based on technical or economic feasibility considerations. It does not say you can only do it if you've adopted rules that say you can do it. It says you can do it. You have the authority to grant the waiver. The rules need to be amended to align with the statute because the statute was amended. Even if you put in the request to the legislature was the one that adopted it, so it was their authority that was granting you that ability. So you have that ability under statute. If it weren't that way, then you could just never amend your rules and ignore statute. And I know that the legislature, and I know you as a former legislator, know that you want your statutes to be enforced the way they are written. And so it's very important that the statute trumps the rules in this instance.
Wouldn't it be fair to say that the statute, when it's a may instead of a shall situation, the legislature says the agency may do a certain thing. And there are administrative rules that guide how the agency will do that when that occurs. And so doesn't the statute take us that far that we may do this, and then the rule clarifies when we will and when we won't?
That means you could, in effect, sit and never adopt rules and then never enforce the statute. And that would lead to a result that is not intended. You may grant the waiver. It does not say you have to grant the waiver. It's no different than the Siting Act saying you may grant a permit after hearing if you've met all the requirements. Even if your rules didn't exist, you would still have the authority to grant a certificate of site compatibility. This is no different than that.
Okay. No other questions. Thank you, though.
And go ahead. Molly, just to clarify, like when I went back and looked at some of the legislative history of this, and Commissioner, you're correct. This was our agency bill. It looks like that we submitted back in 2021. What we proposed to add at that point was in 49-22-16.4, section 2, the very last line. After public hearing, the commission may grant a waiver and an extension of time based on technical or economic feasibility considerations. Correct?
Correct.
Okay, and then what I also found is, based on the testimony, it was fair to say that was the intent behind it, was to give the commission the ability to grant a waiver for new projects. Is that also your interpretation as well?
It is, and as background, it came directly from the Russo project, because when the Russo project was determined it was not going to be able to utilize ADLS, the commission was unwilling to grant the permit because there was a standard requirement to implement ADLS, and felt their hands were tied, that they didn't have the ability to not include that requirement and issue the permit. But yet, and there was a difference of opinion, mm-hmm. setting that aside, mm-hmm. the ultimate result was adding this provision to explicitly allow the ability to have a waiver in a situation where the FAA has denied. Because I think it's a recognition that there needs to be deference to the FAA in the sense of they're protecting airspace. And so that was part of it.
Well, and to your point, there was like a differing opinion on the commission at the time about Correct. Whether or not they had the commission had the ability to grant a waiver,
Correct.
Right? Like, I think it was explicit that everybody felt it was obvious that you could grant an extension of time, but the waiver was where there was some difference of opinion. And so that legislation was put in place to clarify that the commission has discretion to grant a waiver for new siting projects.
Yes,
correct.
It's exactly the scenario that it was this the Russo that it's envisioning. Yes, I agree with you.
Commissioner Haugenhofer?
No, it was just clarified what I was going to bring up. So, thank you.
All right, any redirect?
I just had a couple of questions. I think we touched a little bit on it, but how long have you been developing the Badger Wind project?
Yeah, so original investigations into this site date back to 2017. First leases with landowners is from 2018.
And where are you at? You talked about being in the middle of construction, so do you have all of your EPC contracts in place and your acquisition for all of your components for the project?
Correct, yes.
And so at this point, you've invested significant amount of funds in this project.
Yes.
And is there an expectation from landowners, including the 12 that would lose turbines, or the 9 landowners, but 12 that would lose, it'd be 12 that would lose turbines and 9 that would lose all their turbines, that they're mm-hmm. going to get turbine payments from this project?
Yeah, that's their expectation. I agree.
And the same with the community as far as the taxes. They're expecting to get this additional revenue.
Yes.
And if the waiver were denied, all of that would be lost. Is that accurate?
Yeah, the portions of it outlined in the presentation, yes, would be lost.
So although it's not fully constructed, it is very similar status to what the Basin Project was from a how far down the development road we're at.
Yeah, based on how far execution, procurement, all the steps are, yes, I would agree with that.
Mr. Johnson, any other questions?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Frank?
No, Your Honor.
Any other commissioner questions?
No.
All right. Well, thank you.
All right. Thank you.
And that was your only witness, correct, Ms. Smith?
That is our only witness, unless there were any other commissioner questions that need answered.
All right. Then we will move to public testimony. I think we only have one member of the public. Do you wish to provide some testimony today? All right, come on up. Good morning. I'll have you state your full name for the record and spell your last name.
Darcy Nigum, N-E-I-G-U-M.
Mr. Nigum, you were in the room earlier when I went through the penalties for perjury, correct?
Yes.
And do you understand what perjury is?
I do.
And being advised of the potential penalties for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this case today?
I do.
All right. Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay. My name is Darcy Nigum, and I'm with Montana Dakota Utilities. And I'm here in support of the commission granting the partial waiver request of Badger Wind. So Montana Dakota Utilities does have an interest in this project. We do have a signed power purchase agreement for a portion of the output, and that also includes a purchase option that is under another docket, at least before this commission. But from the standpoint of this project, if there was a reduction in number of turbines, ultimately, that were allowed to be constructed for the project, it would reduce, you know, the benefits for our customers that we are expecting to receive and could have an economic impact on them as well. And so I would ask the commission consider granting the partial waiver that's been requested.
All right. Thank you. Ms. Smith, any questions?
No questions. Thank you.
Mr. Johnson?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Frank?
No, Your Honor.
Commissioner Kringstad?
Can you expand a little more? Is my mic on? Can you expand a little more about, or maybe quantify, like, the reduced benefits and impacts to, like, customers and economic impacts
that you
see from your perspective?
Yes, Commissioner Kringstad. So from the standpoint of the agreement that we have with Badger Wind, you know, we're purchasing a portion of the output, so 150 megawatts of the 250. So there would be a corresponding reduction, at least in the amount of capacity that we would receive from the project, which then would be the amount of energy and also the accredited capacity we would get for resource adequacy. So we would have to go and source those through some other means and mechanism.
Okay. Thanks. That's all I have.
Commissioner Chrisman?
Just to clarify, I think I know the answer, but you mentioned the impact to your customers as far as, you know, the generation potential and the financials. But as far as the flip side of it, as far as the customers and their view shed and having to look at lights all night long, you don't serve any customers within the view shed of this, do you?
We serve customers within the community of Wishick.
Is Wishick yours?
Yes.
I'm sorry. I thought it wasn't.
Yeah. Nope.
Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Haugenhofer.
Thank you. But I have no questions.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Nigum. Yeah.
You're welcome.
All right. Well, that brings us to the end of our hearing. I'll just ask if there's any closing comments that the commissioners want to make. Commissioner Kringstad?
I have no closing comments. Thanks, everybody, for being here today.
Thank you, Your Honor. I do not have any closing comments either.
Commissioner Haugenhofer?
No comments.
All right. Ms. Smith, were you going to file proposed findings and conclusions of law?
We actually have. We filed them on July 15th at the suggestion of staff. We also, after discussion of staff, requested a special meeting to give an opportunity for the commission to make a decision on this. The reason we've asked that is because the project is in construction, and to have a decision as soon as possible would be helpful in that process and moving forward. So I know that I've talked with staff there. They indicated they'd reach out to me once they'd had a chance to talk with the commissioners after the hearing. So.
All right. Well, thank you. Mr. Johnson, any other matters we need to address?
No, Your Honor.
All right. Well, then I will note for the record it's 9:26 a.m., and that concludes our hearing for today. Thank you.